This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. And now a look at the meteoric rise and immolation of the phrase fake news. In the days following the election, the media were adrift, destabilized, craving for some explanation for how they'd gotten so much so wrong. Fake news emerged from the mists.
Tonight, faking news. Political lies spread on social media by unsuspecting users. Did it change the course of the election?
While established media outlets are brands built on accuracy, rogue websites, some masquerading as legitimate, are reporting misinformation, and it's spreading like wildfire online.
Flat-out lies, deemed as the truth. The fake news writer who says he is the reason Donald Trump will be in office, and the guilt he feels about that now.
A seductive narrative for many. And it seemed to have data backing it up.
BuzzFeed News says fake election stories sparked more interest than real ones. BuzzFeed counted comments and shares on Facebook during the last 3 months of the campaign. It found that hoaxes and stories from biased sites far outperformed reports from major news outlets.
All but three of the top 20 fake news stories were anti-Clinton or pro-Trump.
Now, the number one trending article in that time was about Pope Francis endorsing Donald Trump for president. And that wasn't even true.
Finally, it all made sense. Fake news had poisoned the well. And boy, did we want you to know it.
A major crackdown announced today by Facebook. Since the election, the social media giant has come under fire for the spread of fake news on its site.
Last weekend, a fake news story about Clinton led to a shooting in Washington, D.C.
It's now clear that so-called fake news can have real-world consequences. It's a danger that must be addressed.
But maybe it was too catchy. It started as a liberal meme, but then the right ran with it.
Fake news is whatever people living in the liberal bubble determined to be believed by the right. And of course, it's based on a complete hoax.
This is headline from the Washington Post. Russian operation hacked a Vermont utility, showing risk to U.S. electrical grid security, officials say. Of course, if you got to the article now, you'd see a huge correction on top. It turns out the whole thing was fake news, and not the only fake news in that highly fake newspaper.
I think the biggest piece of fake news in this election was that Donald Trump couldn't win.
And then the reductio ad absurdum. Some news is fake. Therefore, all news is fake.
The president-elect angrily denied the claims contained in a dossier, calling it fake news.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
Co-opted in the blink of an eye. Farewell, fake news. And don't let the door hit you on the way out. Because probably the media made too much of it to begin with. Because BuzzFeed released a new study, this time measuring whether people actually trust the news they see online. And it found that even though more than half of people get news from Facebook, just a little over a quarter of them say they actually trust it. So maybe we're not quite as gullible as we'd feared. And another study, carried out by two economists, found that only 15% of people even remembered seeing the fake news they read. And of those who remembered it, only half believed it, a mere 8% of the total. Not only that, but some of them claimed to remember fake news headlines that the study's authors had invented as placebos. Matthew Genskow, who co-authored that study, told us that once you account for the placebo effect, even fewer than 8% believed or even recalled them. Which leaves us where? Was fake news the great moral panic of 2016? Is it still in our midst, summoning its strength, waiting to strike again?
I think we're at the point where, honestly, the term has become almost meaningless.
Craig Silverman is media editor for BuzzFeed.
Today, I used it in a headline, and I kind of felt bad about that, to be honest with you.
Silverman is a longtime fake news researcher and the author of the original study that many used to suggest that fake news might have swung the election. He's also the author of the more recent study that suggests that that's probably overstating the case.
We surveyed about 1,000 American adults, and we asked them two things. One was, where did you get news from in the last 30 days? 55% of people said they had gotten news on Facebook in the last 30 days, and 56% of people said they had gotten news from broadcast TV in the previous 30 days, which is pretty remarkable.
You also asked about trust?
Yeah, so this is where a big gap opened up. For people who had gotten news from broadcast TV in the previous 30 days, 66% of them said that they trusted all or most of the time. And when it came to newspapers, it was even higher. It was 74%. But for Facebook, only 27% of them said that they trusted that information all or most of the time.
A very high degree of skepticism, which is reassuring.
Yeah. But most people in these kinds of surveys rate themselves very good at spotting something that is fake or not fake. We overestimate our ability on that. We always consider ourselves to be very rational beings. And this is especially true for journalists. We think, oh, I'm not going to get fooled. I'm not going to fall for something. But we're all susceptible to this.
Well, then what was the point of your study if you can't believe what people say? That's cold comfort indeed.
Well, you know, that's science. We worked with researchers who do a lot of public opinion polling, and we spent a lot of time trying to craft the questions. But ultimately, you can't control for everything. And so we need a lot more research, and we need the platforms to open up and give more data to more researchers. One of the things that happened with fake news, it became kind of a political football. And so I think we lost some of the genuine conversation around its impact.
So you think that the news media in general have been overstating its power?
It didn't give Trump the election, but it is confusing a certain segment of the population, and it's certainly getting a fair amount of exposure on Facebook. Fake news is really interesting because of what it says about our media ecosystem. What I call fake news is stuff that's 100% fake, usually created for a financial motive. For example, the Pope endorsing Trump hoax originated on a site that was filled with completely fake information run by a guy out of California who had like 40 other sites like that. And he had run literally hundreds of fake news articles over the course of 2016.
He sold ads around them?
It was becoming a pretty good business. And so I think a lot of people flooded into that. The stuff that worked well on Facebook was the stuff that was more aggressive. It was more shocking. I spoke to somebody who runs a pretty large hyperpartisan conservative site. He's got more than 2 million fans. And he was complaining to me that the kids in Macedonia that were pushing fake news did not launch the sites because they love Trump. They did it because it was a business opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they skewed it. If you wanted to compete, you had to do the misleading stuff. And so I think that's one of the stories of the election, of how, you know, the performance of the fake stuff on Facebook created so much noise, so much misleading and false information, that in the end, people may not have said that they believed the headlines, but I think there were a decent amount of people who were awash in this kind of information. So I wonder if, as people who were already inclined to be pro-Trump shared this stuff, did it polarize them more? Did it get to their edges of their network and other people who maybe hadn't made up their mind started to see this stuff a little bit more? And I don't think it's going to change their mind, but I just wonder if that repetition of it over time starts to have an effect on people.
We have talked a lot over the last decade or so about the disappearance of the public square, a place where people can go and share in the same pool of information. It's been more or less replaced with Facebook, with 100,000 million different little filter bubbles. On the other hand, circling back to why we're having this discussion, your study, about the high degree of skepticism people claim to have about this information compared to television or newspapers, should we be feeling the kind of moral panic that so many of us do, that all this garbage is out there?
The thing that concerns me most, when you start to get that kind of information that is fed to you to go to your emotions, to go to your beliefs, that is sometimes fake, sometimes misleading, it polarizes you more. And then it's almost like eating junk food or eating a lot of sugar. You seek more of that out. And the algorithms are built to give you more of what you want. And when they go and they read something that's got another point of view or that doesn't present it in that same kind of hyperpartisan way, what's their reaction going to be? Are they going to read that and be like, this isn't the news I'm used to? Will people forget what an actual kind of fact-based report that isn't torqued look like? That's the dystopian kind of thing. And we're not there, but you can sort of see how the combination of algorithms and our human biases and the massive reach of platforms and a pretty polarized society and a polarizing administration, that is the thing that I worry about most.
So if the problem isn't, strictly speaking, changing people's minds, but increased polarization, fact-checking isn't going to help that, is it?
Real or fake, we love to see and consume information that aligns with who we are as a person and what we already think and believe. We think, oh, I'm not going to get fooled, but we're all susceptible. So the main thing, I think, is just to realize that there's certain amounts of interacting with information that we control, and there are certain things that we do because of our reptilian core. When I read something that makes me feel good, I try to make myself question why that is. And I think that level of emotional skepticism of your own emotions is maybe the next level for people to try and get to. The other piece of it is when you see bad information out there and it's coming from somebody you know and somebody you trust, rather than leaving them a comment on Facebook, try to talk to them on the phone and try to understand. Because if we're worried about polarization, actually being able to talk to people is probably a good defense against that.
Margaret Sullivan, who used to be the New York Times public editor and now writes a media column for the Washington Post, quotes a George Washington University professor Nikki Usher, saying that the speed with which the term fake news became polarized, and in fact a rhetorical weapon, illustrates how efficient the conservative media machine has become. And so Sullivan goes on to write, "Here's a modest proposal for the truth-based community. Let's get out the hook and pull that baby off the stage. Yes, simply stop using it. Instead, call a lie a lie, call a hoax a hoax, call a conspiracy theory by its rightful name. After all, fake news is an imprecise expression to begin with."
I'm sort of on board with that, I have to say. I feel like it's lost a lot of its meaning and its nuance. I've genuinely had a couple of conversations with my editors that maybe we should be talking about hoaxes and propaganda and conspiracy theories. One, because these are long-known terms, and maybe people actually understand the distinctions between them better. I mean, to me, fake news will always be stuff that's 100% false, created for financial motive. But that definition has been lost, I think.
Okay. Craig, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Craig Silverman is the media editor for BuzzFeed. When a news outlet gets something wrong, owns up to it, and apologizes, that's a mistake, not fake news. To call the institution of American journalism fake, based on the errors it will inevitably make, is a by now familiar ploy of the new administration. Cognitive linguist George Lakoff told us it's a tactic known as the salient exemplar. Don't fall for it. As a nation, we stand up for freedom of speech, but there are no slogans proclaiming, no watchdogs protecting your right to actually listen. That's an intensely personal choice, not a political act, until now.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, and Jesse Brenneman. We had more help from Michael Loewinger, Sara Kari, Leia Feder, and Kate Bakhtiarova. And our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter's WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for On the Media comes from the Overbrook Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.